Ladies and gentlemen, fellow students, today I am proud to have the honor to present to you the Prime Minister of Canada, the Right Honorable Mr. Lester B. Pearson.
Mr. Chairman, Madam Chancellor, Mr. President, members of the University, I thank you for the privilege of being here for a few moments today to talk to you, and I thank you for the warm. I thank you for the warmth of your welcome. It is a symbolic welcome. Those on the government side are in the majority and those on the opposition in the minority. I don't know quite what I should talk about. I had rather expected I might be able to talk for a few moments and then answer some of your questions. But it might be a little difficult to deal with questions it wouldn't be difficult for me. It might be difficult for you who are so far away, some of you, to get your questions to me. In any event, I will carry on and we'll let nature or the university take its course. I know there is one subject in which you are particularly interested, and that is higher education, the place of the university in our society, the obligation of governments to higher education, and the obligation of those who receive higher education to their society and to their country. There is no doubt that we are in the midst, in this country and in other countries, of some revolutionary changes in the position of universities and in their relation to their societies and to their countries. The dreaming spires and ivory towers of Toronto and Oxford are being replaced by teach-ins and demonstrations. And that is perhaps a very healthy reaction on the part of students who are certainly far more aware of and concerned about what is going on in the world and their relationship to it than they were in my day when I was a student. I don't recall any great excitement in my undergraduate days over national or international events, but that was in 1913 and 1914 when God was in his heaven, we thought, and all was right with the world, and the world hadn't collapsed over our heads, and it was too shortly afterwards. But today the student in university and the student out of university know that he is going to be immediately affected by everything that goes on, not only in university, but in the world. And I think he is reacting to that awareness in the right way. He is concerned both as an individual who will have a life to live in his country and as a citizen who will have a life to give in service to his country. I have been reading a good deal recently about the place of the university in Canada today, the problems and the opportunities. I was reading, coming here from Toronto yesterday, some reports, and I was reading among them a speech from the head of Queen's University, who in this speech, and it was a very wise one, expressed anxiety, which I think shared by a great many people, about the increased dependence of higher education and the universities on the state, on government. And if it's dependent on government, it's dependent on politics, which is the basis of government. And Dr. Corey went on to say, even if the taxpayer is willing to concede big expenditure on the university, then there will have to be, and these are my words, very big expenditures on universities. Even if the taxpayer is willing to concede big expenditure on universities, he may well say at the same time that the government should stop some of the nonsense he thinks goes on there. And he asked this question, will the taxpayer be able to rid himself of the widely held notion that the professor had a soft life? Well, that is one worry. Another worry I think we must all have in the changes, the revolutionary changes which are taking place and which are bound to take place, will the emphasis on wise and unhurried teaching and research be replaced by the demands and the dimensions of a knowledge factory? I think it is possible to reconcile these two things, the necessity of increasing the facilities of our universities and getting into our universities all those who can qualify, irrespective of financial consideration, but at the same time, maintaining some of the old traditions of scholarship and academic excellence, which is the hallmark of higher education. I believe that university students are right to be concerned with the existing obstacles in the way of securing higher education, and the necessity of making such education available to all who can qualify, and as far as they are capable of going, that no one should be prevented from access to such an education by financial considerations. University students should also be, and I am sure are, concerned with their higher responsibility to contribute to, as well as their right to receive a higher education from society and from the state. Now, the country, through its governments, and primarily through its provincial governments in Canada, because they have the responsibility, as you know, for education, the country has now a duty to make higher education possible for all. Those who are privileged to be able to take advantage of this education have their special responsibility to give priority to service to their country over advantage to themselves. I've often said, in office and out of office, and I've repeated it already this afternoon, that education at all levels should be available to all those qualified to take advantage of it, irrespective of financial considerations. But I've always added, and I add it again, that we cannot achieve this ideal overnight. We can, however, I believe, move more rapidly toward the goal, and that is what I hope my government will be able to do after November the 8th. I know that the present government and any government can easily establish today in our society a connection between the prosperity of the country, the employment in the country, the unemployment in the country, and education. I know also that the federal government has no constitutional responsibility in this field, but I accept the fact, as the leader of a federal government, that the federal government now must be concerned with the availability and adequacy of education to all of its citizens wherever they may reside. We have done something to bring this about in the last 2 years. Our student aid programs, youth allowances, the loans now helping thousands of young Canadians, and a scholarship and bursary plan which we hope to introduce. You can't do everything in this world in 2 years, but you can do a lot more in 5 years. And this is an important thing that must be done, student aid, as well as aid to the universities themselves. And I know there is a great deal feeling in certain quarters that we should put university education on exactly the same basis as high school education insofar as accessibility to all who can qualify is concerned. I have no doubt that eventually this will come. But it's not going to come overnight, no matter what kind of promises you may get during an election campaign. Professor Corey, and I'm quoting him again, I hope he won't be embarrassed by quoting him, he said, it will not do for governments under public pressure to provide free tuition to all university students unless and until the universities have what they need to become and remain first-class institutions. Any other course, he said, any other order of priorities, said Dr. Corey, would be a hollow service in the end to the students and to the Canadian community. Now, in the last few weeks, we have received, via the Association of Canadian Universities and Colleges, certain representations for federal aid to education. Additional federal aid to education. Though this year, the federal government is providing more financial aid to education than ever before in our history, a great deal more, between $250 million and $300 million. Not only to universities, in fact, not primarily to universities, but most of it to perhaps to vocational education and for research. But a great deal more has to be done. And in the Bladen report on which the university's recommendations were based, that were made to me in Ottawa on October the 6th, and whose recommendations have been in substantial amount accepted by the Universities Association, the Bladen report points out that in the next 10 years in this country, university enrollment will go from 178,000 as it is now to 461,000, and expenditures by governments for university expenses and aid to students should rise to take care of this increase from $355 million to $1,704 million 10 years from now. One of the disadvantages of a very large audience is you don't get all the words of wisdom from the audience. Now, you will be interested to know what the federal government reaction is to these recommendations of the Universities Association based on the Bladen report. On October the 6th, when I received a delegation of the universities, I said that we, as a federal government, accepted the analysis of the problem made by Professor Bladen, federal responsibility for doing something about it, increased federal responsibility for doing something about it, and the fact that if the federal and provincial governments didn't do something about it and didn't take these recommendations into consideration in their planning, this country could not go ahead as it should go ahead. It wasn't a question of whether we could afford to do it, the two governments, two levels of government. It's a question of whether we can afford not to make this investment in human resources, which is our most important resource in Canada. And then I got into a little more detail, and I said the federal government was fully prepared to contribute to university financing in a way which, in combination with appropriate provincial action, will enable all parts of the country to meet university needs. But I had to add this as the spokesman of the federal government. The large-scale use of federal tax money for university financing is sound only if it serves the national purposes, which are the concern of the federal government. So as a federal government, though we have no responsibility for educational policy, and that is not going to be changed, we do have some responsibility for seeing that the money we make available for educational purposes is used in the best way for national development. And then the third basic point, which was referred to in the university's recommendations, relates to student aid. And I said to the delegation at that time, my colleagues and I would not feel justified in making large federal expenditures on the universities if some able young Canadians were shut off from the benefits of university education because of financial considerations. Adequate measures of student aid are an indispensable part of our approach to university assistance. And we will be glad to discuss, as quickly as possible with the provinces, how these recommendations, both of aid to the universities and aid to students, can be carried out. And for that purpose, we have already asked, we are preparing for a conference with the provinces. We will initiate this conference, an educational conference with the provinces and with representatives of the universities to see what can be done, how we can plan ahead to meet and solve these educational problems in the years ahead, which must be solved. So I can only assure you that we in our government are aware of this problem. We have done something in the last 2.5 years, which I think has been useful, as governments before have begun to do things which they hadn't done in the past, which are useful for higher education. But we've got to do a great deal more. And that great deal more is going to mean a great deal more in the way of expenditure. The best way, however, to meet the expenditures which will be required for education, and education must be given a priority in these expenditures, is to keep our country prosperous and expanding and developing, and to keep its income going up. And if its income goes up, we'll get more in tax revenue, and if we get more in tax revenue, we'll have more for education and other priority requirements of the Canadian people. So there is a direct relationship between government and education in economic policy and in other policy. There is perhaps one other subject which you will let me mention before I sit down. There is not much use. In fact, it's the essence of futility to be spending money, hundreds of millions, on education, on Social Security, on Social Security, or on anything else, if we are not going to be able to maintain peace and international security in the world. If we allow the peace to be lost and we sink into the unutterable chaos and catastrophe of a third and nuclear war, we won't be worrying about our universities, we'll be worrying about our survival. And therefore, it is the first requirement of government to do what it can to preserve peace and security in the world. And I say today that Canada has played a good part in this search for international peace and security. If you wish to get a verdict on the part that Canada has played and is playing in this essential endeavor, go down to the United Nations and ask the other delegation there what they think about Canada and Canadian delegations over the last 15 years. But let me add two things. It doesn't make for peace and security in the world to advocate unilateral disarmament. It does make for peace and security in the world to fight for general and collective disarmament. And we are doing that. It doesn't make for peace in the world for those free democracies who believe in peace in the world to throw away their armaments when there are armaments on the other side. It does make for peace in the world and security to have everybody throw away his armament and work toward better objectives than can be achieved by armaments. It doesn't make for peace and security in the world to spend all of our time unfairly criticizing our friends and attributing to them motives which they do not possess of imperialism and warmongering. It doesn't make for peace and security in the world to break up the Western Atlantic Coalition, which has been a bulwark against aggression in the last 10 years. So I think we have to keep our perspective in these matters. I think it is possible to fight hard for peace and security. Fight hard for peace and security. But not in fighting hard, demean and diminish and try to destroy the friends who are fighting with us for peace and security. Now that's all I have to say on that subject. There is one other matter that I must at least mention. I've talked about education, I've talked about the necessity of peace and security in the world. I want to say just one word about national unity in our own country. How can Canada play its part at the United Nations and elsewhere in bringing the world together in partnership and brotherhood and friendship? How can we do that if we can't have partnership and unity and brotherhood in our own country? And therefore, surely there is no more important objective before us today than peace and war, no more important objective than doing everything we can in this country to build up a Canada in strength and unity from coast to coast. I feel that way when I come to British Columbia. I feel that way when I talk in Quebec City. I feel that way when I'm in Newfoundland. And I can say the same thing in Vancouver as I say in Quebec City. And out of all this dialogue and division and difference that we are having today, out of all the problems that we are trying to face in this country, a country hard to govern, a country hard to keep united, a country which is trying to build up half a continent, with 19 or 20 million of people, a country which has pressures on it from the south, continual friendly pressures which are weakening its sense of identity. We have these problems, we have these difficulties, we have these dangers to Canada, but we are going to overcome them. We are going to meet and overcome them, and out of all this, we are going to build up a strong, great, and united Canada. Working together as Canadians to advance our own destiny and working together to make sure that that destiny is accomplished in a peaceful world. Thank you.
Mr. Pearson,
on behalf of the students, I wish to thank you for being with us today. We note with special interest your comments on higher education in Canada. Once again, I'd like to thank you.